Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The idea of reclaiming abandoned railways for recreation got started in the 1960s, but really took off in the 80s, when Congress approved a process called rail banking that made preserving these corridors easier. Today, there are about 21,000 miles of rail trails around the country. This includes several dozen trails in New Hampshire. And recently, the state's cycling community has been pushing for more, touting the health benefits of biking and the economic development that rail trails can bring. Today in The Exchange, just in time for summer, we check in on the state's rail trails and let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests in studio. Marianne Borowski is here. She's founder of the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, which is 83 miles across northern New Hampshire from Woodsville to Bethel, Maine. The route is on rail trails, dirt roads, bike paths, and paved back roads. Marianne, really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, Laura.
Also with us, Tim Blagden, president of the Friends of the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail and former executive director of the New Hampshire Bike Walk Alliance. Tim, nice to see you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks, Laura. Happy to be here.
Dave Topham is also here, co-chair of the New Hampshire Rail Trail Coalition and treasurer of the Friends of the Salem Bike Ped Corridor. Dave's also co-founder of Granite State Wheelers and founder of the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire. And Dave, a big welcome back. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
So, Dave, you've been involved in this rail trail movement for a long time. What changes have you seen in recent years?
I'd say the tremendous gain in popularity, usage, overall development. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of progress made. It's been seen by some people. It's also interesting that some people don't know what's going on in their backyard. So we're out to promote it and keep it going.
So who or what do you think, Dave, is driving all the enthusiasm that you just described?
I think it probably depends on the audience you're talking to. But I see a lot of cyclists are cutting back on their road riding due to the distracted, drunk drivers, crashes. So looking for safer places to ride for recreation. So going off-road on rail trails is one advantage. The other, of course, is the fact of commuter cyclists in the southern tier of the state where the rail trails are paved. A lot of people are taking to that versus being on the road because it's obviously a lot safer way to get to work.
So cyclists these days are feeling vulnerable because people are driving, staring at their phones, and there have been some deaths, actually, of cyclists in the Concord area because of drivers.
Definitely.
So that makes the popularity of rail trails even more.
Yep. Obviously, rail trails don't go everywhere. They don't take you door to door. And it isn't just for recreation, but I just want to point out transportation cuts in.
Again, our number here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. We'd like your questions, comments, stories about rail trails near you. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Marianne, as I said, you are founder of the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, which sounds huge, and I'm embarrassed to admit I had not heard of it until yesterday. What drives you to do this work?
Well, I was inspired by the Cross Vermont Trail, which is a very similar system. It spans the northern part of Vermont, 91 miles from Burlington on Lake Champlain, across the state through Montpelier, and ends in Wells River on the Connecticut River, right across from Woodsville. I thought, well, gee, why not take it across New Hampshire? So I ride over there on their route, and I asked the board of directors, do you know of anyone who is taking it across New Hampshire? Because I'd like to be part of that. And they said, we don't know. But they were very inspiring and very enthusiastic and helpful. Anything that they could have done to continue their route across another state or past their trails end sign was going to be beneficial to them, too. So with a 91-mile route across Vermont and an 83-mile route across New Hampshire, we now have 174 miles of biking that can be done. And that not only is good for the locals who can get out and enjoy a walk or a day trip on the trail, but it's good for cyclotourism, people who will be attracted to come and spend maybe their entire vacation budget, much like I do, to go somewhere and to spend time biking across a state or across a beautiful system. So there's these kinds of trails in New York State on the Erie Canal Trail, 380 miles. The CNO Canal Great Allegheny Passage from Washington, D.C. to Pittsburgh. They're all over the place. And I spend my vacation budget going doing that. And I look around here. The North Country is beautiful. What we have here compares very highly with all these other trails around the country. So why not share our beauty here, bring in cyclotourism, and it'll stimulate some businesses in the small towns that are along the way.
Put Woodsville on the map for people, Marianne, so that they can picture in their minds where this trail starts and then it kind of goes across New Hampshire over to Bethel, Maine.
It's on the Connecticut River, and it's where the Amonoosuc River comes in. Route 302 is the bridge that connects Vermont and New Hampshire at that point. And so this is north of Haverhill. It's just a little bit south of Littleton. And conveniently, with that beautiful old iron bridge there, it connects the two rail systems, the rail trails and the two cross-state systems. So it was a convenient place for Cross Vermont to end and for Cross New Hampshire to start.
So why should people who are not as seriously into cycling as you are, Marianne, be interested in developing this rail trail?
Well, I think that it helps the local people have their recreation path maybe get a little bit more attention than it would have gotten if they have just a few miles of path. Now their path is part of a cross-state system. It's part of a multi-state system. So if there's some repair jobs that need to be done, some improvements to the quality of the surface so that maybe, you know, people with wheelchairs could use it, or little kids on bicycles, baby strollers, maybe there'll be a little bit more attention to it because here's a little sore spot in this whole cross-state system. So it might bring in some grant money and some extra attention to those regions.
Tim, talk about the broader importance of rail trails, even if people just use them, you know, once every couple months.
Sure. So rail trails are, they spur a lot of economic development. They are essentially the beginner slopes for cycling, the way easy slopes are for skiing. It's a place to go learn how to ride a bike if that's the way you want to move around. They're very comfortable for walking. They have good stable surfaces and long sight lines, so people feel very comfortable taking side-by-side walks on them. And they're a great way, because they're flat, of getting from place to place. So a lot of New Hampshire is quite hilly, but you can travel a phenomenal distance on a rail trail without having to encounter a big hill. And they're separated from traffic. So they are very low stress. They're an option that people will consider taking and using a bike instead of driving a car.
And Dave talked earlier about the surge of interest he sees in rail trails. What do you think is driving that, Tim?
So many things. It's scary to be on the road for a lot of people until they have quite a bit of experience riding a bike. So cyclists are are looking for alternate places to ride. The population in general wants to have safe places to exercise. So walk a dog, go bird watching, take that side-by-side walk, push the stroller, go out with a wheelchair, a friend who's in a wheelchair. It's good for all of that. Employers like to be located near rail trails because it makes for happier employees. The employees can get to work. You can take a little walking meeting during the middle of the day. Customers like to go to businesses and take the bike. Why not? And it contributes to aging in place, too. So you don't need a license to use a rail trail. They're free. And, you know, from your first walk to your last, you can be on a rail trail. So in New Hampshire, we have a real issue with getting around once you can't drive. And these help that. And they also, because they're built on top of old railroad tracks, they go through all the town centers. So they take you to many places you want to go. which increases their popularity. And in New Hampshire, where the towns are physically located close to one another, it's easy to get to the next town. So our own rail trail, we have an informal tagline for the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail. It's ice cream every 45 minutes. And it's because a family on bikes is going to get from Concord to Hopkinton to Warner to Bradford to Newberry every 45 minutes. And you have an opportunity to go to the library, go to the supermarket, get an ice cream. You know, you're hitting another downtown. So that's what makes them popular.
Well, and I want to ask you some of the specifics about your trail in just a moment, Tim. But let's go to our listeners. Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us with your comments, questions, personal experiences with rail trails in New Hampshire is 1-800-892-6477. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can post your comments on our Facebook page, and you can post a picture of your favorite rail trail there if you'd like. Several listeners have already done that. They're beautiful. Thank you for submitting them. Again, you can put it on our Facebook page or on Twitter. And let's go to our listeners now, all of you. And Shelby's calling from Rawlingsford. Hi, Shelby. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to say that I am a big fan of rail trails in my profession. I'm a direct support professional, so I work with people with intellectual disabilities, which also means they tend to have physical disabilities. And I have found, like, the rail trails to be amazing for them because they can get out in nature without, like, the, you know, difficult of a hike that, you know, we have around here. And they can get that experience of being out in the community because there's plenty of other people walking on them. And I think it's just, like, they're so amazing to have around.
Shelby, thank you so much for the call. Tim, go ahead, jump in.
Sure. So rail trails do support people of all ages and all abilities, and that's one reason that they are so popular. I was just up at Granite Ledges in Concord. It's a nursing home in Concord, and they've just purchased two trishaws to give their senior citizen residents rides on trails.
What's a trishaw?
It's like a rickshaw. Two passengers and a person pedaling.
Uh-huh.
And these particular ones are designed where the passengers are in front and a little lower than what you might picture in your head if you have an image of a rickshaw. But it's a comfortable way to get on a bike. And so I talked to a lady who was 101, had just gone around on it, and she said it was the best thing she'd done in years. You know, so rail trails do support people, everybody.
Thank you so much for the call, Shelby. Nancy sent us an email. Often people are out for a walk, Nancy says, on the trails, which is great, but they walk four abreast, which makes it very difficult for bikers. We shouldn't take up the whole trail. We should talk about trail etiquette, Dave Topham and Marianne and Tim. This does come up, you know, people walking in big groups, dogs not on leashes, going after somebody on a bike, horses. Some of these trails are so popular that these issues do come up.
I certainly agree with that commentary. We see it all the time. But again, we call the term rail trail etiquette. It's a shared facility, and a little bit of courtesy goes a long way. Everyone should stay basically to the right, walking not more than two abreast so you're not blocking the whole corridor. But the main issue we hear most of the time isn't those walking four abreast. It's the oftentimes high-speed bicyclists passing pedestrians or other bicyclists with no warning. And one of the key words is pedestrians have the right of way, number one. Number two, the bicyclists. And if a bicyclist is going to pass a pedestrian or another bicyclist, they pass on the left, announce their passing. Passing on the left, say it, holler it, ring a bell, whatever. And don't scare the person that they are passing. You know, it's a good way to get into trouble that way. So anyway, the etiquette does cut in. The rules are distributed different ways, but like everything else, rules are only as good as the follow-through.
Yeah, so don't walk four abreast, as Nancy mentions. Two abreast is fine.
Usually two abreast and on the right. And keeping the eyes and ears open, even me as a cyclist, on the trail with my bike, coming up behind someone, doing what I'm supposed to do, calling out, on your left, ring a bell. Some of these people are wearing their headphones, iPods, you know, MP3 players, whatever. they don't even hear you.
And then they get mad at you for passing.
Then they're scared because a bicyclist came up on their left.
Right,
whatever.
Even though you said, I'm sure you, Dave Toppin, would say on your left multiple times, but if they don't hear you because their headsets are on,
have
then
it cranked up to level 10, they don't hear it.
What about dogs, Dave? That's a big complaint.
Well, dogs, multiple factors. Obviously, the dogs on the trail should be leashed, in most places at least. And the leashes can't be running across the pathway. The dogs must be on the right-hand side, not darting across to the left. But also the cleanup after the dogs. That's always an issue, too. Some places provide the little plastic bags, and then we find the bags left on the trail that people don't take them back with them. So it's something, it's a maintenance issue in education for the most part.
How about etiquette, Marianne? What would you add to that list that Dave mentions?
Well, I think using the bell is a really important thing. I think that's great. And I feel that if people are wearing headphones and they aren't able to listen and hear a bell, then they should stay further to the right and just assume that they're going to be passed by cyclists or runners. And that would make everything, I think, go quite well.
Can horses use the rail trail that you work on, Marianne, the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail?
Yes, they can. On the rail trail sections, on the dirt road sections, yes. And of course, horses can be on paved roads too, but it may not be as pleasant. But there's plenty of miles on the rail trails for horses to enjoy. And I do see them out there, and I've seen llamas out there too.
Oh, really? Wow. And of course, horse owners, there's waste from the horse too, which is larger than dog waste. What are horse owners supposed to do about that?
Well, that's a big issue right now. I'm not sure what the rules are on that. It's sometimes difficult for a person to get off of their horse and get back on without some kind of a support, a little ladder or something. So this is an important issue, and I know it's being discussed among the equestrian community, but I don't know what their final say is on that.
Okay. Well, rail trail etiquette. I'm sure listeners will have some more comments on that. Nancy, thank you for the email. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's go next to Burlington, Vermont, where Sueno is calling. Good morning, Sueno. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Go ahead.
It's Sueno.
Okay.
And I'm actually in Brattleboro.
Okay.
That's okay. I just wanted to share that I went on a wonderful bike ride on a rail trail from Canaan, New Hampshire, this last weekend to Muskoma State Park. Is that what it was, Muskoma Lake? And we had four families and six children, 4 years and under.
Wow.
That went camping on this trip. And we would have never been able to do it safely if it hadn't been for that fabulous rail trail.
Well, go ahead.
No, it was great. And we were so happy to see how well used the trail was, and our kids could ride the Strider bikes when they wanted to, and we could put them on their pedal bikes if they were ready for that. And we just want more rail trails so we can do family trips like that that get us. We'd love to do a multi-day trip eventually, you know, so please make more rail trails for us.
Thank you so much for the call. Go ahead, Tim. This gets to the economic development that you talked about earlier.
It sure does. And it also gets to what ages are appropriate on rail trails to everybody. So glad to hear that you've got kids on Strider bikes. What a great way to introduce them to rolling around. People are attracted to places that have rail trails. Houses, when they come up for sale, sell faster. They sell for more money. So if someone's proposing a rail trail near you, it's a good thing for your property values.
Your property values go up if you're near a rail trail.
Absolutely. When you look at real estate listings in the paper, those are constrained. They don't have much space, so it's going to say granite countertops, close to rail trail. It's one of those things that hits. It's a big seller.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And after a short break, we'll take a lot more of your calls. We welcome your questions, comments, personal experiences with rail trails. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Last fall, we told you the story of a cold case that changed how murders would be investigated forever.
This is the biggest step forward for solving crime since the discovery of DNA itself.
But at the end of that story, the people found in barrels near Bear Brook State Park were still unidentified. I'm Jason Moon. New developments may bring this 30-year mystery to a close soon. Go to nhpr.org for the latest news and subscribe to Bear Brook wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, rail trails in New Hampshire, where they are, who pays to develop and maintain them, and what's the etiquette along the more popular trails where many users might gather on a beautiful weekend day. What's your favorite rail trail? Post it on our Facebook page or on Twitter, or send us an email with your comments and questions. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And you can call in if you'd like, our number, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests. Marianne Borowski is here, founder of the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, 83 miles across northern New Hampshire from Woodsville to Bethel, Maine. Also with us, Tim Blagden, president of the Friends of the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail, and Dave Topham, co-chair of the New Hampshire Rail Trail Coalition, treasurer of the Friends of the Salem Bike Ped Corridor. And all of you, let's go right back to our callers. Ray is calling in from Londonderry. Hi, Ray, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Just a brief comment about walking on rail trails. A few years ago, my misspent youth playing football caught up with me, and I had to have ankle fusion surgery. And then when I was able to walk again, I needed a safe, flat place, no more mountain climbing and things like that. And I found the rail trails in my area have been just wonderful for that, and I was able to get back in shape without re-injuring myself. So it's really good for walking, too.
Wow, that's all I have to say. Yeah, no, what a great story, Ray. And, you know, aging state, Dave, so more and more people will maybe not be able to make it up Lincoln Lafayette, but they can tackle the rail trail. Go ahead.
That's definitely true. And I think Ray said he's from Londonderry. That section, which you might know, it's being extended to go up toward the airport and will connect down through Derry, through Windham, all in Salem.
That you can ride your bike to the airport.
So just to get the point across, the continuation and connectivity of these rail trails, there's a project underway, which I'm also involved in, called the Granite State Rail Trail. It's to develop a 120-mile corridor from Salem up through Manchester, Concord, and all the way to Lebanon. It's approximately 60% done and rideable today, not all interconnected. We're bridging the gaps. But Londonderry is coming on strong, and likewise Derry, Windham, Salem. There's a lot of nice places, and those are paved.
So as we mentioned all these different trails and the segments and the sections, I want to let everybody know that our producer, Jessica Hunt, put all sorts of maps and resources on our website. It's nhpr.org/exchange. So on the radio, obviously, we can't describe every mile of every trail in New Hampshire, but nhpr.org/exchange. And Jessica put up a lot of information there. Let's go back to our callers. Ray, thank you for that one. Tom is calling from Bath. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air. Tom, good morning. Are you there? Okay, I guess we lost Tom. Tom, you can give us a call back if you'd like. It's 1-800-892-6477. Myra sent us a note. Myra says, what are the challenges to maintaining and increasing the rail trail network in New Hampshire? New Hampshire Department of Transportation making rail trails a higher priority in their work? What is the role of the Trails Bureau? And I'd like to ask all of you on this, but maybe you first, Marianne, what is the role of the New Hampshire Department of Transportation and the Trails Bureau, which I believe is under the Park Service, not DOT?
The Bureau of Trails manages the rail corridors. So anything that's done with maintenance on any of the state or federally owned rail corridors is managed by them. Everything goes through from their point of view.
And what do you think would help with what Myra talks about, increasing the rail trail network, challenges to maintaining and increasing? I want to hear from everybody, but go ahead, Marianne, and then Tim, yeah.
Well, typically, there's sections that are easy to develop. They're already there. They're in pretty good shape. But then you come to where there used to be a bridge over a river, and it's going to be very expensive to put that bridge in, or there's some washout somewhere, or we need a tunnel maybe to go under a highway. These are hugely expensive things. So slowly, these bits and pieces are happening. The connectivity is a really big deal, because if you go a few miles in a rail trail and you're having a good time and you find that trail's end sign and you look over the edge and there's the river, it's sort of disappointing. You want to keep going and see more. But it takes grassroots efforts. It takes grant money. It takes construction. There's a lot of work and a lot of time. Some of these ideas start up, and it's years before anything happens. But piece by piece, they come together.
Well, sure. And I would imagine with more severe rainstorms that we're seeing these days. There's maybe more maintenance to do on some of these trails. Go ahead, Tim, and then Dave.
Sure. So with the state-owned corridors, the actual state rail corridors are typically owned by Department of Transportation and managed, as Marianne says, by the Bureau of Trails. There's a bill in front of the legislature right now to do a statewide economic impact study and update of the railroad state rail plan, rail trail plan. We're trying to convince the state and enlighten the state as to how valuable these resources are so that they see the maintenance of the underlying corridor as a sound investment. Typically, state-owned corridors, the state will make the local entity, either a town or a friends group, sign a use agreement to develop the trail on top of the old railroad grade. We want to make sure that the state does the underlying support for the infrastructure. So fixing a culvert, for example, or maybe maintaining a bridge, that might fall on the state. And then the top dressing, you know, the trail surface and benches and kiosks and things like that, that'll fall onto the friends groups that are maintaining the trails.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. You want to jump in on who develops these things, who maintains them, and so forth.
Yeah. Tim was just referring to what's called Senate Bill 185, and totally support everything that Tim just said. However, in addition to that, the fact is that there is another bill going through for an economic impact study, how rail trails and the use of non-motorized activities, especially in the North Country, can be beneficial to the community versus 100% motorized. You know, we have Ride the Wilds up north, 1,000 miles of trails, brings in money from that contingency, the OHRV users in general. No question about money coming in. But there's also the offsetting factor where people can not some use some of those trails now for non-motorized because they're basically overwhelmed with the motorized type vehicles. So this study is underway. It's a separate bill in 185 that actually would go ahead and say, what's the plus, what's the minus, where's the balance on this? Because the facility should be available for all to use and not drive people out of their homes either.
That's, again, Ride the Wilds, referring to the big ATV network that the state and volunteer groups have built in the North Country. Very successful. If you go up there, you see ATVs all over. You see them in front of hotels. So clearly people wanted that infrastructure. So what are you saying there, Dave, that cyclists should be able to use those ATV networks as well, or more that you want your own network now?
Well, I won't say the own, but I call it a balanced approach. But the problem is in North Country, and we work with the folks up there quite routinely, it comes down to the fact that a lot of the OHRV users aren't just on the trails that were originally designated for them, but they're using public roads to connect the trails and then subsequently going by residents where people sometimes have to move out of their own homes. They can't stand the noise and everything with the traffic going by, so they can't stay in their own home in the summertime.
So, but getting it back to the cyclist issue and the rail trail issue.
Right.
So hang on, Tim. So what do you want, Dave? What would you like to see if it were your birthday and you could just, you know, get whatever you wanted there?
I say the balanced approach to maintain trails where they are non-motorized to keep them going and have everyone in their own relative area where they can do their thing.
Go ahead, Tim.
Sure. So everybody I meet on rail trails, whether they're motorized or non-motorized, great, friendly, happy people. People no matter how they're moving around, are glad to be on rail trails. But what happens when you have heavy motorized use on especially a stone dust trail, is that the torque of the wheels mixes up and creates a soft surface. So it's like walking on sand on top. So it makes it a little harder to walk and much harder to pedal a bicycle.
Yeah, you don't want to bike on super soft ground like that.
Exactly. So, you know, I've gone out with my family on the Sugar River Trail. Everybody I meet's wonderful. We're all waving and having a good time and talking to each other. But it's difficult to have that shared use go on a non-hardened surface trail. So you really do need separate spaces if it's going to be heavy ATV use.
Go ahead, Marianne. You live in the North Country.
Well, the North Country is well known as a playground for the motorized recreation, whether it's ATVs, dirt bikes, snowmobiles, and And they're right. They have a great place. It's beautiful. The scenery is fabulous. There's places to stay, to eat. But now there's quite a bit of interest in the mountain biking and the off-road riding, the gravel grinding, and the North Country's perfect for that. So now with this Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail that I've been working on, which is more of a gravel grinder kind of mixed surface trail, and the Borderlands Project, which is a collaboration of seven different mountain biking areas in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and southern Quebec. And the idea there is to bring in more mountain bikers to not only the Kingdom Trails, which is a huge attraction for mountain bikers, but say, hey, you mountain bikers, we've got all these other places that are not that far away. So now these trails are not generally shared with ATVs, the mountain bike ones. The Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, yes, there are sections that are shared with ATVs, and that's just the way the rail trail is designated. It is for all users, motorized, non-motorized, and as Dave said, we will coexist on that. And maybe there's some research being done on what kind of a surface could maybe be used that would be a little bit more amenable for all users to really enjoy themselves.
So the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, again, which you described earlier, 83 miles across northern New Hampshire over to Maine, is that fully in operation now, Marianne, or are there still unfinished pieces?
It's fully in operation because I've linked together, much like what the Cross Vermont people did, existing infrastructure. So there's two rail trails involved, the Amonoosuc Rail Trail, which goes from Woodsville, Bath, Lisbon, and into Littleton, and the Presidential Rail Trail, which starts at the Pondicherry National Wildlife Refuge in Whitefield and Jefferson and goes through Randolph and Gorham. And then in between are various dirt roads and some paved roads. I tried to put together the nicest paved roads that I could find for cycling. So I used existing infrastructure, so it existed as soon as I put a map together in a little brochure and a website. And I did include the word adventure because, again, there are places where we're sharing with ATVs. We might have some of the soft surfaces. A road bike is probably not good on that. But then a mountain bike may not be good, and it might be a little tedious, on some of the paved roads. So part of the challenge and part of the adventure is choosing the right bicycle tires to use to enjoy all of this. It's kind of a patchwork of multi-surfaces. You go from one to the other, and if it's good, it's like the weather. If it's good, you know in a few minutes it's going to change. And if it's bad, and you know in a few minutes it's going to change too.
Hence the word adventure.
Exactly.
So you're saying pieces of this trail, and it sounds like other trails, are shared with ATVs. It seems like it would be good to at least let folks know that, because I'm thinking of the mom who called earlier who did a trip, three families, lots of little kids. You know, I'm not sure how compatible ATVs are with, you know, four-year-olds on bicycles.
What I would suggest to that family is to go up and look at the Presidential Rail Trail.
So check it out before you go.
Yeah, that one does not allow motorized vehicles on it during the summer season. It does allow snowmobiles. We share very well with that. But it's all a dirt, hard-packed dirt surface, and it's off-road, and it's got the presidential views, beaver ponds, mountains, streams, everything you'd want, and it's great for families.
Go ahead, Tim.
So I just wanted to underscore that different rail trails do support different uses, and you should absolutely check with the trails website or the Bureau of Trails website before you go, because that's spelled out very clearly. You know, on the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail that we're developing, it's no OHRV or motorized wheeled vehicles. In some places, it will support snowmobiling, and in other places, it won't.
Dave?
I have to agree. It depends on the community, the overall management, and also the ownership. Most of the trails, as Tim said before, and Marianne, most of the trails in the system in the whole state are owned by DOT for the infrastructure, but some are privately owned. And those that are privately owned, basically, they can do what they want with that particular trail. For example, even Derry, town of Derry, owns that section of the trail.
I see. So it depends on who owns it, what the rules are around that. So it isn't just that anybody can get on any of these trails at any time with any sort of vehicle. You kind of need to check it out first, as Marianne said.
And the trails are usually posted. The trailheads have signed what's allowed, what's not allowed.
Well, and the ATV users, their registration fees help pay for the development of that trail network. So, you know, they may be saying, hey, I paid for this trail.
Yeah, up in the North Country, that's right, where that was developed especially so that they could have a network of trails off-road as their playground, and that's working out very well on the off-road section of it, the trail section of it. I know a lot of controversy with OHRVs on the roads, but the trail section is a real boon for the North Country.
Let's go back to Bath. And Tom, are you there this time? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Tom, as you know, and I live in Bath, right alongside the rail trail that you were talking about. And what I want to let you know is that the ATVs use it quite a bit, and their wheels develop moguls. And then they get a grant to bring a grade all through the trail to level it again. And what that does is that brings up all the stone ballast, because this rail trail was still a train track up until 95. And when that happens, you can no longer use a mountain bike on the trail. You would have to go to a balloon wheel type of bike, and those start at over $1,000, even more. And so the problem is the ATVs really control the rail trail up here, and it's a bit of a horror show for me living on alongside it. It doesn't help my property value at all. I get dust in the summer. It's horrible. And the other thing we're not talking about are the dirt bikes, and they create quite a hassle, doing wheelies by my place and speeding up and down like it's a racetrack. It's a pretty much of a horror show for me. I don't like it at all.
Well, Tom, I'm glad to hear from you, and I'm sorry you're having a hard time with that. And this gets into a topic that we have done dozens and dozens of programs on over the years, and that's motorized versus non-motorized recreation. You see it in the trails. You see it on the waterways. It's basically motorized versus non-motorized, noisy versus quiet, call it what you will. Tim, this comes up all the time.
It does, and I rode the Amonoosuc Rail Trail with my family a couple of years back, 22 miles. I had a couple of let's say an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old with me. Everybody was on their own bikes, and there is that section in the middle, about a mile and a half, where that large aggregate is on the surface, and we ended up having to walk that section. My kids could not bike on that surface. But either end of the trail, they had a blast on it.
So if sharing is so hard, are you guys advocating for just two completely different systems, one for ATVs and one for cyclists and walkers?
I think it depends on the road surface. If we can find enough space, yes, there's definitely an advantage to having places where you don't have to, as you're walking or biking, have to stand to the side and let the OHRVs go by. The dust is a real issue in the summertime. The noise, it's more fun. But we're all living on the same planet. We've got to squeeze in next to each other. And in some places, we may have to share in order to have a network that works.
Well, and that's probably going to be the subject of the study committee that the legislature has put together, sorting out some of these issues. Tom, it's really good to hear from you. You can give us a call after a short break, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment.
Recently on The Exchange, transgender panelists answer a listener's question about how to talk about those times before their child transitioned.
Just because they've come out as trans does not lessen that experience. You still own those memories. And I would say to any parent, those memories are yours of your child. It's just being thoughtful both to what you need as a parent and understanding that your first priority is to make sure that your child is loved.
The Exchange is your place for New Hampshire conversations. Weekday mornings at 9, only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Join Roundup host Peter Biello for all the state news you might have missed this week. That's tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, with the warm weather season here, Granite Staters are out on the rail trails, and we're finding out where these trails are, how they're built, who maintains them, and some of the issues that come up around etiquette, around sharing the trail. Let's hear from you. Your questions, comments, and personal experiences are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. We've been getting lots and lots of input from our audience today. That is great. Tim is calling in from Stratham. Hi, Tim. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions for the guests. Number one, tell us about this controversy in the Lakes region where there's an existing tourist railroad that might have to go out of operation because there's a community down there. I don't know if it's Meredith or somewhere in the lower Lake Winnipesaukee area that wants to take the existing right-of-way that the tourist railroad is using and create a rail trail. The second question is kind of similar. You mentioned, Laura, at the very outset, this program called Rail Bank, maybe we could explain Rail Bank and explain the fact and get some comments from your guests about the fact that the Rail Bank, the trails that are part of the Rail Bank, could someday see a resurrection of their original use.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tim. And you're right. Rail banking was supposed to be, Dave, about preserving the corridor for either recreation or possible future rail use. Now, this has come up before. Sometimes people say, oh, I like the idea of a rail trail, but I also don't want to, shut down the idea that passenger rail or freight rail could come back on these corridors.
That's very true. And for all the state-owned properties, they do have the legal right to reclaim a right-of-way, an old rail corridor, for active rail. I think like 60 days notice or so, they can basically say shut down and move it on. However, it still comes down to the fact, even for all the railroad buffs and those thinking that the best use for an old rail bed is to put active trains back on it, if we did not maintain those trails and use them for our non-motorized use, primarily sometimes motorized. But anyway, we are maintaining those trails. As such, they're still intact.
So if someone wanted to put a new railroad track the corridor would be ready.
Right, it would be attacked in there. If you leave it go into the abandonment stage, you have encroachment, you have washouts, you have also, it's not going to be there for possible railroad use.
No, it's a great question, Tim. Thank you. And go ahead.
Sure. So as Dave said, all the state-owned railroad corridors that are used as rail trails do have a use agreement, so 180 days to get out of the way if the Department of Transportation wants to take it back for some future transportation use. That's one of the things we talk about in the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail, where we're stitching back a fully abandoned corridor. It's very difficult work, but it will never be subject to that 180-day take-back clause. So if transportation changes and we're all zooming around on jetpacks over these railroad corridors or personalized drones, God knows what else, in the future, the Concord Lake Sunapee Rail Trail will still exist because it's being stitched back together differently.
Well, Eric sent us an email. He says, New Hampshire is full of railroad history and our rail trails are evidence of that. These rail trails are a good idea, Eric says, but the unfortunate thing is that all the people who want rail trails want the rails removed. So that's what we've been talking about. Eric says, none of these people are receptive to a trail with a rail option, kind of like what you see in Wolfboro. Having the rails in place is a good idea because there are groups out there who like to ride rails on their personal motor cars. It is another way for these trails to gain funding. Marianne, you're nodding. Sounds like that's a thing that
yes.
you know about.
Yes.
Okay.
I know the trail he's talking about, Likewise. The Cotton Valley. Yeah.
So Eric also says cyclists and hikers want these trails, but once they get them, they think they own it. Rail trails are a great idea, but I wish it was open to many recreational activities, such as OHRV, etc., instead of just hiking and cycling. Eric, thank you so much. And this is kind of what we covered a few minutes ago, that it's shared use, but each trail is a little different based on the trail, based on the ownership. Right, Marianne? Just remind us of the importance of reading before you go.
That's right. It really depends on who owns that property. And if it's private property, they can stipulate who's there or not. And if it's state property, it's stipulated also, whether you can use off-road vehicles on it. So it really depends. And the good news is that there is a variety, so that there is an opportunity, but you need to see what's out there. The Rails to Trail link, traillink.com, is very good to to find out about what trails are close to you in your community. And also, if you're traveling and you're driving, say, you know, through New York or Pennsylvania, you can look and see, okay, I'm going to go on that site. Maybe my hotel is going to be right next to a rail trail, or I'll take a hotel that's next to the rail trail so that I can go out and take a walk after sitting in the car. I don't need a map. I know it's going to be safe, and I can enjoy that. So
yeah.
You need to look. The traillink.com is a good place, and TrailFinder, what we have up here in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, is also a good source for not only rail trails, but other recreation paths and even hiking trails, too.
And I want to remind everybody, our producer, Jessica Hunt, put, again, a lot of those links and resources that you mentioned, Marianne, on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Tim, did you want to jump in real quick?
I wanted to say that with the rail still in place, far fewer people can enjoy those things. Those cars do exist. They're a fun form of recreation. But when we're trying to get as many people as possible on those corridors, lifting the rails helps with that.
Well, thank you again, Eric, for all the comments. And Nancy emailed to say, I'm about to get on my bike to go to work, but I wanted to share how essential and fun rail trails were in teaching my deaf daughter to bike, as roads are so dangerous for a deaf child. So that's wonderful, Nancy. Thank you so much. David writes, I ride the Northern Rail Trail frequently. I love it. I plan on riding as many of our trails as possible this summer and fall. David says, I'm 75 years old. Great exercise. Please mention the Great American Rail Trail that is being built across the country from D.C. to Washington State. Dave Topham, wow, biking a rail trail from D.C. to Washington State?
There is a tremendous amount of effort being put into rail trails across the entire country. And just to flip back to a point, the idea of railroad trail, I think it was Tim from Stratum. There are sections of the state where we do have rail with trail. That Wolfboro has it along the scenic railway up there, but it has to be separated with a fence designated by DOT. So we do have rail with trail. The other one, Wolfboro, which is the Cotton Valley, where they have the putt-putt, the rail cars go up there. Basically, the cyclists can ride between the rails on the hard pack, but it's still not the same width and not as accommodating for a bicyclist as a regular rail trail would be.
Pete and Sue in Derry write, please ask your guests to address our concerns as walkers. We stopped walking on our rail trails because too many of the bikers race by and do not announce that they are passing on the left, making us feel very unsafe. Wow, Pete and Sue, I'm sorry to hear about that. And I've heard, Dave Topham, that Derry trail is very popular and it does get crowded on weekends.
Oh, Derry, Windham, Salem, those sections make up 9.3 miles paved. We have from downtown Salem, downtown Derry. Those are very popular, and they can be quite crowded on weekends. And again, it's a matter of courtesy. You know, people should know the rules. They should display the common courtesy to say, on your left, passing, whatever. But how do you enforce it? There's no enforcement, just a matter of trying to spread the word best we can.
Yeah. Is it possible to widen that trail?
No, it's 12 feet wide. That's it.
Okay. That's as far as you can go. All right. Yeah.
And good good signage does do a lot to help. So at every intersection, if there are not signs up on a section, maybe a little extra signage saying where to walk, where to bike, and how to be nice to each other.
All right. Well, Pete and Sue, thank you very much. And maybe, Pete and Sue, you can go on the website, nhpr.org/exchange, and find another trail not too far from you that maybe is a little less crowded. Let's go to Brett in Manchester. And Brett, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to call. I run a bike shop in Manchester. We're about a stone's throw away from the Goffstown Rail Trail, and that's a beautiful rail trail. You could do, you know, 10 miles round trip from, you know, front to back, and it even connects to the Manchester Rail Trail. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, having the rail trail has been a pretty good, you know, business booster for us because, you know, we do rent bikes and stuff. But I did want to also mention that I went up to Concord last year sometime. They were doing the 10-year plan, the budget plan. And I went up there as kind of a representative for the NH, New Hampshire Bike Walk Alliance, which is a really good service to the community. They try and, you know, make people aware of what's going on with the trails and trying to build more trails. So that's a really good, you know, avenue to kind of, or a good website to look at. I'm very familiar with them. I try and support them as much as possible. And then there's also, it's called gmap-pedometer.com. That's also a really good trail finder. I'm not sure if it's up on the website. I haven't had a chance to look.
Sure.
But that's a really good resource to check out to find trails that people aren't necessarily really familiar with. As well as like Strava. Strava is a really good trail finder app.
So, Brett, let me ask you. I just read an email from Pete and Sue in Derry who say they don't feel safe walking on their rail trail anymore because the bikers whiz by and don't say on your left. How do you talk to cyclists about this in your shop? Do you think the shops need to do a little more education?
I mean, there is definitely, you know, an etiquette and education that needs to be done. And I'm not sure exactly who it was that just said it, but, you know, having some form of signage that can inform the community of what proper etiquette is, I think would be a really good idea. Unfortunately, like I was saying, I went to go up to Concord for the 10-year plan budget, but the trails were not put in there. And I think if we want to bring a younger crowd into the state, having more recreation like that, it would have been a better idea to at least have some form of budget to put in the system to, you know, say, hey, let's try and put some money into this. Let's try and build this so that we have that crowd whenever we do start growing, or that we have that space whenever the state does start growing. But if there's nothing there for the younger crowd to really do when it comes to outdoor recreation, then they're not going to come. And that was my argument when I was talking to the budget committee. Unfortunately, it didn't get put in the 10-year budget. And, you know, hopefully next time that we do that, it will. But in New Hampshire, Bike Walk Alliance was a big part of trying to get that pushed in, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get that put in there.
Wow, Brett, it's really good to hear from you. Thank you very much. I think everybody wants to jump in real quick, and we did a whole series a week or two ago on New Hampshire's workforce shortage, and Brett's kind of tapping into that promoting this idea of New Hampshire's a fun place to get out and mountain bike or go on these multi-day bike trips could make it more appealing to a younger demographic. Go ahead, Tim.
Sure. So a lot of states have woken up to the fact that having a good trail network is a huge boost for economic development. And the governor did put in HB 2 a request for $3 million in state funds. But I don't think that's going to actually make it into the final budget. But New Hampshire ought to start putting state dollars in for rail trail development. They'll get the money back, I am sure of it.
Marianne, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'd like to say that, of course, the rail trails and recreation paths are magnets for families and for people who want to go out in their community. But it can stimulate other things like trailside art, display the historical assets of the railroad or the old antiques of the village, perhaps. It can promote gardening projects and town beautification. These trails go right through the center of towns. There's often an old station there that in some communities I've seen have been rehabbed to beautiful buildings and ice cream shops or even B&Bs.
Old train stations, you mean, Marianne?
Yeah, old train stations right on the rail line. And it enhances the community with a gathering place. So I think this would be attractive. You know your neighbors, you have a place to gather together. And you can have a kind of a bit of a funky vibe to your community centered around the railroad history and then have the trail right there to enjoy.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because on Facebook earlier today, Lindsay wrote to us. She says, "We are partial to the Ringe Rail Trail, mainly because it's right out our front door. Literally, our home is the old train depot for Ringe." Lindsay says, she says, "We walk, bike, and cross-country ski it. There are historical markers along the way," just like you said, Marianne. And an Eagle Scout made nice info boards at some of the access locations on things to observe in each section of the trail. So that's exactly what you're saying, Marianne. It's a tool of community development. Right. Go ahead, Dave.
The economic development aspects and pushing it is all well and fine. We're definitely pushing that too. But going back to what Brett said, Bike Walk Alliance, New Hampshire, President Paula Bedard, and I met with one of the leaders of East Coast Greenway this week about getting renewed emphasis of money into the state 10-year plan to advance trail development, which if we push this through, it's just in the infancy stages now, but it would actually be legislation going ahead to get it into the budget as legislation in 2021 and a 10-year plan. So East Coast Greenway, Bike Walk Alliance, we're all over it and we'll try to make it happen.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay, for that note. And let's take one more call. This is Sharon in Barrington. Hi, Sharon. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, my question is, what will be done about bathroom facilities and trash? Because you're going to probably have a lot of young children, some in diapers. You're going to have older people who will need facilities, and trash from picnics or whatever happens to be carried on the trip.
This is a great question, and I believe this came up recently on the Seacoast where they're looking to expand. And some neighbors did say, hey, trash, noise, and so forth, people leaving picnic stuff around, also bathroom facilities. Marianne, have you dealt with this in the development of the trail you've worked on?
Not yet, really. Most of the trail systems in North Grundy are kind of a carry-in, carry-out situation. So it really hasn't been too bad yet. But I can see that in the communities, they need to have the trash cans. And these old railroad stations sometimes are converted such that they have a bathroom facility. It's their information center. And that would help. But it's costly to do this.
Well, that's the thing. Sure. Once you erect a bathroom, you have to maintain it and clean it and so forth. And that does cost money.
But the town itself will most likely benefit from having people come in. The little businesses along the way are going to have people there enjoying the ice cream and the coffee shops and enjoying sitting in the sun. So there's business comes in and it behooves them to have good maintenance in that area.
Especially if they're on Tim's trail where he said there's ice cream every 45 minutes. Tim, do you want to quickly address Sharon's concerns? This does come up.
Sure. I'm on the board of directors at Parks and Rec in Warner. We're carry-in, carry-out park. So just as you were any place else with your child in diapers, you bring them in, you bring them out. And as Marianne said, the trails go right through downtown. So stop in, patronize a local business, use their facilities.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We could have talked a lot longer. Lots of listener input on this topic today. And again, I want to refer everybody to the website, nhbr.org/exchange. Lots of resources there. Marianne, Tim, and Dave, thank you very much for being here. Really appreciate it.
It was a great pleasure.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.